The Table with Sue Perkins.
It was a group of Italian thieves that trained a jackdaw to make money out of cash point.
Show and tell mixed with remarkable facts from the natural world.
They actually start doing it inside the egg.
What? That's
cool.
Yeah. And the parents will actually talk back to them in baby language.
Oh, through the egg. Herring gulls are amazing.
The new series of Nature Table with Sue Perkins.
I can see why they mate for life. It's unlikely to find a second partner who'd put up with that noise.
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. Available now.
Now on Radio 4, the outlandish adventures of Nathan.
Welcome to the continued adventures of Nathan Blakely, a one-time pop star, now best described as dead. Like many humans, Nathan didn't really smash life the first time round, so now he's being tested as an animal. His actions are judged by a celestial panel, Mahatma Gandhi, Florence Nightingale, and David Bowie. So far, they are not impressed. So if Nathan ever wants to make it out of this mess, he's going to have to achieve great things. I'm Carol, his new spiritual liaison officer, and this is Reincarnathan. An autumn leaf dances across the steps of a Parisian church in a small square in Montmartre. It's the perfect scene. Imagine Emily in Paris, but without Emily. Oh, lovely. The leaf settles at the base of an elm tree, next to a peculiar pile of discarded items. A crumpled suit, a pair of cheap sunglasses, a trilby, and a tangled mess of bandages. How on earth did these items get here? And is the answer anything to do with that rustling in the leaves up above? It's a bonobo ape.
Bonjour.
Although, that's not him. That's a pigeon. But he's talking to the ape. And if my French GCSE serves me well, he's just said hello.
Comment vous appelez-vous?
Summit about an apple?
Je m'appelle Nathan. Il y a un mariage dans le cinéma. Non, l'église.
Interesting. Please tell me more.
Hey, don't just reply in English. Why are you automatically assuming your English is better than my French?
Oh, I apologise. I hold my hands up. That was deeply impertinent of me. It is never civil to presume.
Okay, so your English is probably marginally better than my English.
May I ask, because it is intriguing me, what on earth could bring a bonobo like yourself to Paris?
Well, I suppose you could say it's a love story.
I adore love stories. Please, will you tell me yours?
Depends how long you've got.
About 28 minutes.
Perfect.
Incroyable. Please, allow me to gather my friends. This deserves an audience. Michel! Henri! What are you doing?
Soiling Peugeots!
Yeah, well, you can soil Peugeots later. Get over here. Come and listen to the incredible tale of the bonobo in a tree in Paris.
It all began some 6 months ago in a faraway land called England. At the time, I was living under the name of Banjo in Whipsnood Zoo, a place I knew all too well, because as a human, it was one of my regular dating haunts. I called it my woo zoo. I'd make a joke about the zebras looking like barcodes, say something heartwarming about penguins mating for life, and 9 times out of 10, we'd end up necking in the reptile basement. In fact, it was in that very zoo that I wooed my one true love, Susan. At first, being back there made me miss her. The other bonobos, sensing my sadness, tried to help, saying things like,
"Would you like to have sex?"
Or,
"Would you like to have sex?"
They're a very highly sexed species, you see. But they're also a kindly bunch, and eventually I learned to accept zoo life. My superior human brain gave me distinct advantages. For example, on my very first day, a visitor mistakenly dropped a book through the bars, and I managed to grab it before anyone spotted. My very own copy of Stephen King's The Shawshank Redemption to read before bed each night. Granted, not as good as the film, but books never are they? But it was something to do. And it also drew the attention of Dr. Mabel Germantrude, a young primatologist.
Germantrude's log, 10:15. Bonobo enclosure. Oh, wow, this is interesting. Banjo appears to be mimicking human behaviour.
She was a PhD student studying bonobo intelligence and could clearly see I was special.
He's not like the other apes.
And I'm not going to lie, I enjoyed the attention. That little bit of fame again. each astounded comment.
He could revolutionise our understanding of primate intelligence.
Providing me with a lovely little dopamine hit. Yum. Dopamine.
Note to self. Remember to get oat milk on the way home.
And in a way, it made me feel like I mattered. You could say I'd found something close to peace. And then everything changed. It must have been a Thursday, because I was eating bananas in the Sky Bar, the highest platform in the enclosure. I'd memorised where our bananas appeared on different days to make sure I always got first pick, and Thursdays it was always the Sky Bar. And of course the bonobos had no more concept of Thursday than they had of chinos, so there I was, sifting through the bananas, nabbing the best ones for myself. Too firm. Not firm enough. Flaccid. Squish fest. Too hard. Sweet spot. Let's get you out of these yellow things. Finally, the rest of the bonobo crew clambered up the rope ladder and, as usual, were gobsmacked by my fruit prescience. How did I always get to the bananas first? While I ate, the bonobos whispered amongst themselves.
He's extraordinary. Can you explain it, Kevin?
No, but I'd be happy to discuss it over some sex.
All right.
As they started sharing out my hand-me-down bananas, I was preparing to have my post-nana nap when something caught my eye. Someone was staring at us from the concrete viewing platform. Someone I hadn't seen in 5 long years. My old human girlfriend, Susan.
Look at these hungry, hairy guys.
It was really her. My heart soared. But then just as quickly, it stopped soaring and hovered. Because I could sense that something was wrong with Susan. Despite her beaming ear-to-ear smile, her rosy cheeks and her sparkly Life's Never Been Better t-shirt, it was painfully clear to me that this was a woman still in mourning. For silly old me.
That one looks like he's looking at me.
Before I knew it, I had leapt from the Sky Bar and was clinging onto the metal of the viewing balcony, staring straight into her apparently happy but actually very sad eyes. I felt our connection reaching out across the years, across the species.
I think he's constipated, which is hard to believe given the amount of bananas he just put away.
Yes, she was laughing, but there was a sadness in her laugh that suggested she had given up on the idea of ever really being truly happy again.
Yeah, he's a right banana hoover, that one.
I knew that voice, and the face it was coming out of. The wraparound shades, the bleached goatee, the left forearm tattoo of a pig on a motorbike. It was Phil. My best friend and the drummer in my band. Thank God Susan wasn't alone in her grief. Thank God she and Phil had formed a strong platonic friendship based on shared memories of how much they both loved me.
I tell you what, that ape seems to love you as much as he loves bananas.
I think you're right.
But tell you what, he's not the only hairy back monkey round here who's in love with you.
Oh, stop it, Phil.
I mean it. And surprise, tomorrow I'm going to whisk you away to Paris.
But it's only last week you whisked me away to Spain.
I just love whisking you.
You're a whisk taker.
At which point he got down on one knee before pulling a small box out of his back pocket.
Phil, what are you doing? It's a ring. It's huge.
Will you marry me?
My heart, having soared and then hovered, was now plummeting back down to earth. It was having a right old workout.
Wow.
Well, don't know if this sweetens the deal, but I have already taken the liberty of booking a chapel. The chapel of Saint-Emilion in Montmartre.
You've already booked the chapel?
Yep. Tomorrow. And I've invited all your friends.
Surprise wedding?
It's a surprise wedding. So what do you say? Will you make me the happiest man in all the world? Or the unhappiest, bearing in mind I can't get any of my deposits back at this stage.
Yes. Yes!
I reached through the bars and tried to snatch the ring out of Susan's hands.
Oi! Get away! This isn't a banana!
That's my fiancé, you hairy beast! Hit him! Hit him, Susan!
I'm trying!
Oh, he's got the ring! Right, I'm
Phil,
going for his arm!
Oh, my God!
Which is when Phil bit my arm. And then I went ape. And everyone lost it. Visitors started running and screaming. Someone smacked the panic alarm. Dr. Gurmentrude dropped her clipboard on her foot.
Banjo, what's wrong?
Customer incident in Ape Zone Sector 5. Banjo the bonobo's gone loco. Repeat, Banjo the bonobo's gone loco. I knew this would happen one day. Take down with extreme prejudice.
It was Norman Borman, head of zoo security. Legend had it his father died whilst watching a documentary about bonobos, and he'd hated our kind ever since. A tranquilizer dart pierced my arm. Bullseye! I mean arm. Bullsarm!
My grip on the bars began to weaken. The last thing I saw was Phil and Susan disappearing into the crowd.
Oh, Phil. Yeah. I love the way you protected me from that awful ape. Yeah. Let's go this way. There's something I want to show you in the reptile basement.
Oh, cheeky.
And with that, I let go and fell down, down, down with only one thought in my mind. Was I being paranoid, or were they more than just friends? I awoke some time later to find myself in the Bonobo Recreation Suite, aka the bit with a tire on a rope. Sensing my distress, the other bonobos gathered around, and one of them offered to help.
Oh, you seem upset. Would you like
to... Some problems can't be solved with sex, Barbara.
Not true. Like what?
Like when someone you love falls in love with your best friend.
You need to forgive them. Then the three of you just need to sit down and have sex.
Please leave, Barbara. I was so low. But maybe there was something in what she was saying. Not the ménage à trois, the forgiveness bit. Maybe I did need to forgive them. I crawled out into the exercise yard. My mind was flooded with memories of Susan. Her go-to foods?
Onions.
Beloved movies?
Yes, Avatar.
Favourite songs?
I am the one and only. Oh, Chesney.
And there it was, playing in my head, making the most of my memory's clearly exquisite production values. But then, the song looped back to the beginning. That loop was the loop of a ringtone, Susan's ringtone, which could only mean one thing. She must have dropped her phone in when I swung for the engagement ring. I scrabbled around in the mud until... There it was, gripped in my prehensile foot/hand. But would the screen respond to my leathery bonobo toe/finger? Yes! And would the passcode still be Chesney Hawke's birthday? Yes! And when I saw the screensaver of Susan and Phil dressed as Princess Peach and Super Mario, and with their arms around each other, would I feel a sudden, unexpected burst of happiness for them? Not even slightly.
No! How could you, Susan? How could you?
Stop moaning, Nathan. Get over it.
Why should I, Carol?
Susan's only had one relationship since you died. You've had four.
Yeah, but neither that snail, horse, or either of those squids were Susan's best friend.
You need to forgive, Nathan. And remember, Phil will always be second best. You will always be her one true love. Oh, call incoming.
I glanced at the phone to see the name My One True Love across the screen and swiped, fearing the worst.
Hello, my name is Phil. I believe this is my fiancée's phone, and you have it.
I hung up, my mind now made up. This wasn't a time for forgiveness. This was a time for getting to Paris, to their perfect little chapel, and their perfect little wedding day, and having my perfect large revenge. And what's more, I had my ticket out of here. Susan's phone.
In that small square in Montmartre, Nathan's story was going down a treat, his pigeony audience cooing with pleasure.
This is absolutely fascinating.
I am loving this.
Me too. I wonder if he manages to escape from the zoo.
Well, I'm currently sitting up a tree in Paris.
No spoilers!
Tell me, how did you break out of the zoo using only your phone?
Well, remember how I told you I'd found a copy of The Shawshank Redemption?
Yes!
Well, that gave me an idea.
Of course. You made a hole in the wall and tunnelled your way to freedom.
Nearly. When Norman Borman, the head of zoo security, did his nightly rounds, I whacked him over the head with it.
Genius.
Giving me just enough time to climb over the walls of the zoo and then use Susan's phone to order a Deliveroo. But I knew I had to be fast, because Norman Borman would be waking up soon, as The Shawshank Redemption is only a novella.
Hi, I've got your Deliveroo. Are you Susan? Ooh. You reading The Shawshank Redemption? Yeah, I mean, it's not as good as the film, is it? But, you know, what book is?
Whack! Oh! And The Shawshank Redemption had claimed its second victim, the Deliveroo driver. Within seconds, I was on the motorway.
Nathan, what the hell are you doing?
Scuppering a wedding. First stop, St. Pancras. I've got a Eurostar to catch.
Nathan, let it go. When they got together, you'd already been dead for 3 years.
Well, I don't feel dead. I'm a bonobo on a Yamaha doing 90 and a 70. I've never felt more alive.
You're my hero, Banjo! Woo!
What? Why is everyone beeping me?
You've gone viral! The press are all over your daring escape!
I'm famous again?
Yep, Deliveroo's even going to change its name to Bonoboroo.
Oh, Mama! Lovely, lovely dopamine.
You might want to check your wing mirror, though.
I'm coming for you, Banjo.
Norman Borman, hot on my tail in his all-terrain Zoomobile, which was basically a Hyundai with a zebra sticker on the bonnet. We zigged and zagged through the suburbs of London, Norman getting closer with every turn, and then suddenly, Norman slammed on the brakes. I turned my head to see him receding into the distance. The congestion zone, get in! I was in the beating heart of London, home of London buses, London taxis, and people from London. I was buzzing, although as I pulled up outside St. Pancras Station, my spiritual advisor was doing her best to ruin things.
Hand yourself in, Nathan. They'll never let you on the train. You're a wanted ape.
Which is why I'm going to need a disguise. I quickly scanned the station shops for options, then clocked it, directly opposite. M&S. Yes! It's a big one! It'll stock clothes! And then in I strode, looking exactly like a bonobo, before reappearing in a suit moments later, looking exactly like...
a bonobo who's trying to sneak into a wedding.
Ah.
Use your imagination, Nathan.
Oh, I hate using my imagination. This is exactly why I always detested fancy dress parties. That's it, boots. It's got everything you need for the minimum cost, minimum effort, fancy dress costume, which is why I always used it as a human.
You'd cover yourself in Vaseline and go as a fatberg.
No, the Invisible Man.
Bandages and sunglasses, it's a bit half-assed, isn't it?
Plus, I'd set the advantage points against the cost of some rubbish wine. It was win-win-win wine.
And yet somehow, the word that comes to mind isn't winner.
And so, minutes later, I was clad in full Invisible Man garb and was slipping unnoticed through the packed crowds towards the Eurostar, and it was working. Granted, walking upright like a human was taking some getting used to because I'd come to see my hands and feet as interchangeable. How am I supposed to know which is which?
The ones with shoes at the end are legs.
Ah! Why have I got feet on my arms? Oh, I see it's because they're my legs. Ah! Why are there shoes on my hands? Oh no, those are my feet.
Come on, mate.
But thankfully, nobody noticed. Nobody, that was, until...
excuse me?
Norman Borman, who now blocked my way with his tranquilizer gun pressing into my chest.
Can you please explain why you are dressed as the Invisible Man? And why you are carrying so many bananas?
Why did I grab those 18 bananas from M&S? What a giveaway! I had to think of my hands, I mean feet. I pulled out Susan's phone and started typing, before holding it up to his face.
Hello, I have lost my voice, but I won't let that stop me going to Invisible Man Con in Paris. Okay, that explains the outfit. But what about the bananas? You've written something else. I'm so excited about attending that I haven't even let my recently diagnosed potassium deficiency hold me back.
Norman furrowed his brow in thought.
Okay, I suppose that checks out. But one more thing. If there is an Invisible Man conference happening in Paris today, why can't I see anyone else dressed as the Invisible Man? Okay, let's have a look. Maybe it's because their costumes are so good. That would explain it. Very well, on your way, sir. Enjoy Invisible Man Con.
He nodded and let me past. And when he was out of sight, I used my bonobo climbing skills to scale the barriers to the Eurostar platform before leaping through the train doors just as they beeped shut. And with that, I was on my way. I found a quiet table on the Eurostar and placed my bananas on the seat next to me so no one would sit there. To keep a low profile, I sank back into my seat and stared at Susan's phone. The screen lit up, and there was that cruel photo again. Susan and Phil dressed as Super Mario and Princess Peach. Ugh, one thing was for sure. I needed a dopamine boost and fast. So seconds later, I was on the BBC News site, loading up the video for the lead story.
Breaking news. A five-figure reward has been offered for information leading to the retrieval of Banjo the Bonobo, an ape that a leading primatologist has labelled absolutely remarkable.
Nice. That was more like it. Me being important.
Dr. Ruby Germantrude has described Banjo as one of a kind.
Banjo is without doubt the most spectacularly selfish bonobo I've ever come across. In fact, he's the closest thing I've observed in the animal kingdom to a div.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and it got worse.
I've come to believe Banjo may in fact be the missing link, but not the one between apes and humans. The one between apes and whatever really stupid thing came before them.
I was gutted. I don't know what you call the opposite of dopamine, but whatever it is, it was coursing right through me. As was a big old dose of animal tranquilizer.
You sold me a pretty story with that message you wrote on your phone at St. Pancras, Banjo.
Norman was back,
and it nearly worked, until I remembered that you wrote it with your feet. Come here!
I launched myself into the air, grabbed the luggage racks, and swung my way down the carriage away from Norman.
Everybody be calm! I'm a zookeeper!
To my horror, I found that this was the last carriage. There was nowhere to go. I was an ape on toast, unless... Dazzling sunlight flooded the carriage as we emerged from the Channel Tunnel.
Ah, my eyes!
We were in France! My boot sunglasses bought me a few precious seconds while Norman struggled to adjust to the light. I yanked open the window and was about to swing up to the roof when suddenly I was gripped by indecision. Why was I doing this? Was this whole revenge mission just me being spectacularly selfish again? Maybe I should be happy that Susan had moved on from the world's biggest div. Maybe this div needed to forgive.
Bull's leg!
So when another tranquilizer dart pierced my leg, I left it.
Bull's ear!
And the next one.
Bull's ankle!
And then, understandably, I fell asleep. When I opened my eyes, I was sitting on a chair that felt familiar. I was back in my armchair, and my legs were gently encased in my round-the-house shorts. God, I missed them. And who was that talking to me? My Susan.
Come on, Nathan, please. I love fancy dress.
I know, and I've already said I'm going as the Invisible Man.
But it's a Nintendo-themed party.
No one cares about the theme.
I care, which should be enough.
Okay, how about a compromise? What if you dress up?
Yeah.
And I stay here and order a Chinese takeaway dressed as me?
But it's Phil's party. He's your friend.
It's fancy dress, so he'll never be completely sure I didn't go.
You really are spectacularly selfish, aren't you? Fine, I'll go as Princess Peach on my own.
Hang on. You're going as Princess Peach?
Yes, so what?
You're going to go to the party by yourself and then pose lovingly with Phil. You didn't get together 3 years after I died. You got together 3 years before I died.
What are you on about?
Shush, you're not real. You're just a memory slash dream. I need to make myself wake up. Wake up, Nathan. Wake up, Nathan. Wake up. Come on. Wake up. Wake up. Annoyingly, I woke up back on the floor of the train carriage with Norman standing right over me.
You're coming back to Whipsnoat.
I had to think fast, but I was out of ideas. And then there it was. Across from me, a passenger lay snoozing with a book called How to Hide on a Train resting on her lap, which gave me a brilliant idea.
Ow!
And he was out for the count.
In Montmartre, all the pigeons stared at Nathan in slack-beaked wonder.
And here I am.
But how did you get from Gare du Nord to here?
Uber. Actually, very easy.
Oh, oh yes, they said convenient.
One click.
Hang on, the wedding's starting. I need to get in there and have my revenge.
Oh, go on,
Banjo,
do it.
It's disgusting the way they treated you.
And what are you going to do when you get in there?
Well, you know the thing you guys do to Peugeots.
Oh.
Yeah, are you picking up putting down? I've eaten 18 bananas over the last 24 hours.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. Well, may your aim be true, Banjo. Go for it.
Banjo.
Nathan, the massive idiot, jumped down from the tree and lolloped towards the church. Last chance to turn round, Nathan.
No way. Why didn't you tell me they'd got together before I died?
Because if I told you that, I knew you'd never forgive them.
Why should I forgive them? They don't deserve it.
They don't deserve it, but you do.
Sorry, Carol, I've come too far. I'm going to burst in, there's going to be a huge commotion, and then you'll see.
The heavy doors creaked open, and Nathan leapt into the hushed church, landing in that cool Spider-Man pose. And then, nothing. A few heads turned, but no one seemed that fussed to see an ape in the nave.
I'm a bonobo at a wedding. Why isn't everyone freaking out?
Feeling a bit awkward, Nathan slunk into the nearest pew.
Okay, well, I just need to wait for the perfect moment. When the minister asks if there's any objections, I'll wreak havoc.
Nathan couldn't see very much as there was someone very tall sitting in front of him. But he could hear Phil doing a reading.
I am the one and only. Nobody I'd rather be. I am the one and only. You can't take that away from me.
The guest next to Nathan turned and whispered,
Phil's such a legend, isn't he? Doing a reading from Chesney Hawks. Susan's gonna love that.
That was weird. It was Ginger Spice. And then The tall person sitting in front of Nathan turned round, and it was Darth Vader.
Yes, Phil's really gone the extra mile to make this perfect for Susan.
At which point, the giant banana to Nathan's left chipped in.
Nice costume, by the way, so current. You've come as that ape off the TV, right?
Yeah, you've really mastered the body language.
Yeah.
Hang on, are you Andy Serkis, actually?
Good shout.
It was a fancy dress wedding, which explained why Phil was kitted out as Robin Hood. What a thoughtful thing to do on Susan's wedding day. Shame Nathan was about to ruin it all.
I am the one and only. You can't take that away from me. Thank you.
Thank you for those words, Phil. They were incredibly moving, even if I do say so myself.
Oh, it's lovely.
Great that the minister got in the spirit and came as Chesney Hawks.
No, that actually is Chesney Hawks, you idiot.
Whoa, is there anything Phil hasn't thought of?
We will now hear some words from the bride.
Susan took to her feet. For a moment, she was a silhouette with her back to the guests.
Can't deny it. Phil has really pushed the boat out. Bet he's even got her a Maid Marian costume to go with his Robin Hood.
And then she turned around and the light caught her sunglasses. Her bandages fluttered and she tipped her trilby to the crowd.
The Invisible Woman!
Hello, everyone. This surprise fancy dress wedding has been the most perfect day of my life. And, Phil, the icing on the cake is this costume you got for me because you knew I'd want us all to remember someone very special who isn't here today. But I like to think that wherever he is, he can see us right now and that he's happy for us.
If anyone knows of any reason why these two may not be married, please speak now or forever hold your peace.
And Nathan didn't say a word. He was too busy crying.
You may kiss the bride.
I am the one and only. Nobody I'd rather be. I am the one and only. You can't take that away from me.
And as Chesney sang the happy couple down the aisle, everyone applauded with joy. Even a certain bonobo ape.
Carol, this is unbelievable. I'm getting a dopamine hit. It's a brand new feeling. I'm happy for someone else.
Well done, Nathan. I knew you had it in you.
It's quite a new sensation. Like I'm finally having a positive influence on the universe.
Which is when the pigeons flew in.
Go for it, boys. Imagine they're all Peugeots.
No! No! No!
Poor Chesney, the number two and only.
Reincarnathan starred Daniel Rigby, Ashley Maguire, Amy Beth Hayes, Freya Parker, Mike Wozniak, Tom Crane, Henry Packer and Chesney Hawks. Music was by Phil Leppard and sound design was by Jerry Peel. It was written by Tom Crane and Henry Packer. The producer was Harriet Jane and it was a talkback production for the BBC.
And at this time tomorrow, it's The Now Show.